talking about the national popular vote here on the program a couple of days ago with Michael Maybach. And the National Popular Vote Compact is a group of states coming together that would say if the state voted for one candidate or the other, it wouldn't matter. The Electoral College members from that state would go to whoever won the national popular vote, and those Electoral College votes would therefore go with whoever won the national popular vote. Now, if you think about that, it would have changed the outcome of the 2016 election. Many conservatives, myself included, don't buy into this idea at all. We think it's sidestepping the Electoral College. We don't think it's constitutional. But my next guest is certainly conservative, not to be questioned on that. Saul Anuzis, the president of the 60-plus Association, Republican Party politician from Michigan. He was chairman of the Michigan Republican Party from 2005 until 2009, and a candidate for the national chair of the Republican National Committee as well. So he knows a thing or two about being around the party and conservatives. Saul, good to have you back.
Hey, great to be with you, Steve.
But your take on the national popular vote, not popular among some friends, I think is easy to say, but tell us, lay it out for us. The thing about the folks here on the right, we will talk about it. We don't silence anybody. We have the conversation, so put it out there.
No, I'm absolutely with you. As you said, you know, you and I probably agree on 99% of all the issues out there, and this happens to be one that we have a difference of agreement on. But I will just say this, you know, there's two things that really affect me in this regard. I want to make sure that every voter in every state is politically relevant every time. And today, that's not the case because 4 out of 5 Americans live in states that are either decidedly Republican or decidedly Democrat. So the net effect of that is we, for all practical purposes, elect the president of the battleground states of America versus the president of the United States of America. And, you know, if you take a look at it, we elect over somewhere around 514,000 elected officials in this country, all of whom are elected by whoever gets the most votes, but one, the one that represents the country as a whole, the president of the United States. And that's because 48 states have chosen what is referred to as the winner-take-all rule with regards to how they use the Electoral College. And 2 states, Nebraska and Maine, use the congressional district plan. And that creates the kind of distortion that I think affects public policy, and it also affects politics in a negative way. And I will just say, with regards to the Constitution, you know, there are only 17 words in the U.S. Constitution that describe what the Electoral College is. And being a strict constructionist, which I believe you and I both share that view, the Constitution says each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors. That's it. That's simple. The state legislatures have exclusive and plenary right to determine how their electors are chosen. And therefore, whether they think it's in their selfish best interest to use a winner-take-all rule, to use a congressional district plan, to use a national popular vote, to use a proportional plan, every state legislature has to decide if it's in their selfish best interest to cast their electors based on some system that we've used, many systems that we've used over the last 250 or so years of our,
well, that,
of our great
that part's
republic.
True. When the documents were put together, though, only there were 2 votes held on whether or not the election of the president should be a direct election. Some people thought that Congress should select the president, but they thought that that way the president was not separated from Congress. He'd be unduly influenced and a servant to the Congress. So they said no. And they asked about direct election of the president not once but twice. Only one state voted for it twice. That was Pennsylvania. One state voted for it once. That was Delaware. The rest of the states and all of the representatives rejected the idea of a direct popular vote for president. So it's quite clear that going around what we have now would not be constitutional to me. And so what's the advantage? Let's go to 2016. I would be disenfranchised.
Let me just correct that for 1 second. So there were, they cast 31 votes over 21 days with regards to how to elect the president of the United States. And it is true that direct elections were discussed, but they could not agree how to elect a president. And that's why they created the Electoral College and used the apportionment that they currently did. But what's interesting, using your logic, the one system that was never discussed, that was never voted on, that was never even brought up in any of the conversations, whether it was the Federalist Papers or anything else, is the current system of the winner-take-all that we currently use. So under your logic, the current system wouldn't be constitutional because the founders didn't even contemplate the idea that someday we would be using a winner-take-all rule to determine how the president of the United States is elected.
But the state's federalism was put in place, and in the 12th the 12th Amendment further codified what we have today. And so the national popular vote, as put out today would have elected Hillary Clinton in 2016. I don't think you support that idea.
And not at all.
If I'm in a state that votes for candidate A, but candidate B gets the popular vote, then I am disenfranchised. And the fact of the matter is, you call it the president of the battleground states. That's fairly true. And that's okay. Because in America, to become president, you have to appeal to a diverse cross-section of America. You can't just get the big cities. You can't just get the rural areas. You have to get a cross-section, which is why Iowa matters. And Florida matters. And California matters. All of these states matter because they're very different. In order to be president of the United States, you have to appeal to a broad cross-section of the country, right or wrong.
That is correct. And you would have to do that whether you had a national popular vote or you use a current winner-take-all system. Under a national popular vote, you would have to appeal to even a broader group of voters because every voter in the country would count. I mean, look, you're not disenfranchised if you happen to be a part of the national popular vote interstate compact. The fact is that under a national popular vote interstate compact, every single vote would count. Whether you voted for a Republican or you voted for a Democrat, irregardless of what the margin of victories were, every vote would count because ultimately you would count up all the votes in all 50 states and the District of Columbia and then and only then determine who the President of the United States is. Where today, look, you and I in 3 minutes could go through the 50 states today and determine with about 95% accuracy where 4 out of 5 of those states are going to fall in the next presidential election, leaving maybe 10 battleground states for next time around.
You see, the
and
problem
again,
with all
I
this
think
is,
that
to me, if that was to come to pass, New Hampshire would never get a visit again. Las Vegas might get a visit, but Nevada in general, Iowa, ignored. All these small states, and nobody would go to any place like South Dakota or North Dakota or Montana, which for the most part they don't, but even these small states that are important would no longer get a visit. You would never get a visit outside of Detroit in your home state of Michigan, for example. I believe that it would disenfranchise the small states completely, which was what they were fighting against from the beginning. The small states were concerned that the big states, like Pennsylvania at the time, would run them over. That concern hasn't changed.
Well, no, it hasn't. But if you want to be factual about it, there are 13 states that have 3 electoral votes or less. And of those, 6 are decidedly Republican, 6 are decidedly Democrat, and only New Hampshire is a swing state. And so when you take a look at it from presidential politics, what happens is that the only state that gets paid attention to today is New Hampshire, because not because it's a small state, but because it is a swing state. The same thing is true in Iowa. What you would find is if you take a look at our home state of Michigan, when you run for governor in the state of Michigan, or if you're going to run for the United States Senate in the state of Michigan, you don't just campaign in the city of Detroit and ignore the rest of the state. You don't even just campaign in the 5 largest cities in the state of Michigan. You have to campaign in every single corner of the state to make sure that as a Republican, you maximize your votes in outstate Michigan, minimize your losses in the big cities, and then fight the fight in suburban and urban districts. Mm. The same thing would be true under a national popular vote. We now use what's called micro-targeting. Every party has a list of over, you know, every
so,
single voter
you
in America,
know, I could,
where every conservative.
Hold on. I could dig deeper into the weeds, and I will next time. But we're up against it. You see, that's how well this conversation goes. Saul Anuzis defending the national popular vote, as he continues to do. Sir, we will continue this conversation next time. Thank you for being here.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
Quick break. We'll be right back.
Your time to shop early while the selection is at its best is ticking away. Celebrate your 4th of July with a bang at Sparky's Fireworks Outlet. 3731 Ann Arbor Road, just a half a mile east of the East Michigan Avenue Mine. Get the biggest boom for your buck at Sparky's Fireworks Outlet. Save even more with a Sparky Bundle. Don't let your 4th of July fizzle. Get to Sparky's Fireworks Outlet early and save big before it's too late.
No matter where you are in life, here's a question to consider. Do you have the right financial advisor to help you navigate where you want to go? An Ameriprise advisor will take the time to truly understand what's important to you and help you prepare for whatever life brings, both the expected and the unexpected, by providing personalized advice based on your goals and needs, and regular reviews along with digital tools to help you stay on track. With an Ameriprise advisor, you can feel more confident, connected, and in control of your financial life. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call me, Ameriprise Financial Advisor, Craig Stiles, today at 517-483-4893. That's 517-483-4893. Office is located at 2400 Lake Lansing Road, Suite B, Lansing, Michigan, 48912. Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, member FINRA and SIPC.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I don't know how to talk like a parent. Don't make me come back there. You see what I mean? It's pretty awful. Try it again. Don't make me come back there. Now that's pretty good. That one kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.